Welcome to the Breakfast Leadership Show, where we interview global thought leaders on business, leadership, and life. Here's your host, keynote speaker, best-selling author, and chief burnout officer of the Breakfast Leadership Network, Michael Levitt.
Welcome back. I've got Ed Ofterdinger on the line. Ed, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for getting up early and meeting with me.
Oh, my pleasure. I'll always get up early to have conversations like this because it's something that I know when we talked in the pre-show, we're both passionate about. We want people to be better. We want organizations to be better because it benefits the world. So for those that don't know you, why don't you share a little bit about you and we'll dive into the conversation.
Sure. Thanks. Well, I'm a leadership coach and co-founder, chairman, essentially managing partner of a firm, AO People Partners, which is a DC area based executive coaching, culture transformation business. I like to say I'm a recovering accountant. I, for many years, was in that profession. I'm a former executive managing partner of Baker Tilly US, which is a top 10 accounting and advisory firm. And before that, I was the CEO of Beers and Cutler, which was the firm we merged in to kind of really launch Baker Tilly US. And that was in 2009. So that's me in a nutshell. I have a co-founder, Catherine Allen. We wrote a book, which we can talk about, but we really, what we do is we believe that building conscious development cultures, you know, ones that really invest in their people's skills is what makes the difference. And that makes a difference at work, financial performance. It certainly makes a difference for them and probably possibly could be a really important thing for contributing to the world. So I don't want to belabor it, but that's me in a nutshell.
My brother identifies me as a reformed accountant because I worked for a CPA firm in my youth and going yes. through college and all of that. So from one fellow bean counter to another, hello, great to have you on the show. But it's not a field that I'm in, but it's one of those foundational things that sure. you use those skills every day and somehow, some way. So I'm thankful for that. So if people are going through college or university and they're struggling to figure out what kind of field they want to go in, it's like, you know, get an accounting background, get a finance background. That'll help you no matter where you go or what you do. But
I'm laughing. So, yeah. My dad wanted me to, I wanted to be a teacher. And my dad's like, no. You know, so what I figured out I could finally do after I'd been a true accountant for 8 or 9 years, getting into management leadership was about as close to teaching as I could get. But yeah, it's a good place to start without a doubt.
Of course. And you're teaching now and, you know, advising executives and organizations. So your dream came true in a roundabout way. So it's definitely beneficial. So yeah, let's talk about the book because I always ask authors, you know, why did you want to give up so much of your life and time to write a book? Cause it is a time consuming adventure for sure.
As you know, well, that I think the short start of that is that all my life, going all the way back to my maternal grandmother, I had the love of the word. And, you know, I was always a journaler, keeping track of things. And I knew, in fact, when I sent my letter out saying I was retiring from Baker Tilly, I let people know I was going to do it. So Catherine and I got together and we had this idea about conscious development really potentially being, you know, the greatest form of social contribution, if you will, that it really makes people, you know, just better with their thinking and happier and more productive. So we were kicking around a bunch of ideas, which are really the model of how we advise our clients. And since she knew I wanted to write, she said, well, why don't you write a fable and I'll take the back end. And so I had a ball, to be honest, creating these characters. You know, they're drawn from people I know. People always ask me, is Andrew you? No, there are a lot of things about Andrew that are me from my experiences as a managing partner and advising clients. But, you know, it was one of those things. At the same time, I'd gotten involved with conscious capitalism, which was the movement started by John Mackey, founder of Whole Foods, and Raj Sisodia. And so because we were interconnected and I had started the DC chapter, their imprint became a pretty logical place for us. And you know a lot about publishing. So it's kind of a hybrid, not self-publishing. It's not, you know, big shops. But so it was just a lot of fun. It was a lot of work, as you said. But I've got a novel in the can and I'm working on a book that kind of with a friend that kind of combines golf and leadership. So that's kind of, I like to write is the short answer.
Well, that's great. And I tell people that finally write their book, I will jokingly ask, so, you know, when's the next book coming out? And majority of the time they're saying, I've got a framework from it. It was one of those things, even though it was very time consuming and a lot of lessons learned and all of that, they actually enjoyed the process because they can see the creativity. Yes, there's all the marketing and the figuring out, okay, what, you know, font do you use and your cover and all those fun things. But ultimately it takes together, it doesn't matter what kind of book it is, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, it takes stuff from your past. It takes stuff from what you're seeing right now in the world. And there's an element of, you know, future looking and going, this is what I see things, or this is what I hope to see with things if things fall in a certain place. So it's kind of a roundabout way of just kind of taking the past, present, and future and putting it together in a story based on your perspective. Because people say, well, I'm going to write a leadership book. And they're like, I want to, but there's a million leadership books. I said, of course, but none of them are from you. And your perspective as an individual is completely different. I mean, there's similarities, of course, with others, but your perspective is only yours. And you getting that out there in print where people can see, I read books all the time, listen to them as well. So I, you know, got Kindle, read the physical, listen to audiobooks as well. So consume it a lot of different ways. But every book I read, there's always notes that I take or an aha moment or that makes a lot of sense. I didn't look at it that way before, or that I'm going to implement into some of the conversations that I'm having because that makes a lot of sense. And that could cause some breakthroughs for that company or that individual. So it's, if you want to write a book, write the book. If you're not a writer, at least read or consume it. It's a whole different ballgame than consuming social media and instant posts and things like that. And it's one of those things where you pretty much have to singular task to take it in, which in this world of multitasking and everything being thrown at us, it's nice to sit down and just actually focus on one thing. It's a game changer.
100%. A couple of things that, you know, one of the, you know, our book, we do have audio version. So that, you know, for people that like to drive around listening to them, I want to be clear. The model point you said is really spot on, because what we do in our work, you'll find in the book. And in the back, Catherine, I had the fun part, I think, which was writing the story of Andrew and this consulting firm and, you know, all of the, you know, it was like a pretty good guy that lost his way. And then all of a sudden, holy smokes, a lot happened and he came out. But she wrote, there's about 30 or 40 pages in the back, which is our model. It is the things we believe and how we think about it. And so for any other author, budding author out there, you're right. It's a great way to capture what it is that you believe. And we use it all the time. And our clients, you know, we give it to them or they buy it or whatever, as you know, because you've done it yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the roadmap, you know, that I follow for making sure that I never burn out again. And it's simple, but it's hard. You know, as you know, Jim Rohn liked to say, you know, there's a lot of things that are easy to do, but they're also easy not to do. And sometimes we always gravitate to the, yeah, I'll get to it later. And it's like, yeah, later never shows up. So it's important for people, just especially from an organization standpoint, and, you know, just to segue into, you know, a little bit more about the book and the work that you're doing, is I see it time and time again. The organizations that are strong and healthy are ones that actually take the time and invest in their people. Yes, they invest in product research and market research and all of that, but they invest in their people and they don't deal with situations like the great resignation or quiet quitting or having difficulty finding people because their people are there. And when they do need to bring in new people, you know, they've got a ton of champions internally that'll say, yeah, I know somebody that'd be good for this. Or, you know, they talk to them during the interview process and they go, wow, this is an amazing company. I want to be a part of that. And it's not that hard, but so many organizations make it hard. So I'd love to hear, you know, some of your thoughts about that, you know, the conscious way of, you know, investing in people and training them and all of that. Going back to your finally a teacher analogy, because it's important work that you're doing.
Thank you. Yeah, you nailed it. So a couple of things that I would start by saying, since we've already determined you call it a reformed accountant, I'm recovering, whatever. So at the end of the day, I'm running a business and ran businesses. And so I understand the importance of that group of stakeholders, which is the owners. So if you were to pull up your copy of Conscious Capitalism, not our book, Conscious, Capable, and Ready to Contribute, you'd find a lot of data, which shows that the companies that do what we're talking about actually outperform the market. So, and you say, how could that be? Well, there's lots of reasons. They don't leave, like you said, and the cost of turnover alone is just staggering, 50 to 200% of an annual comp. So there's a lot of reasons for people that say, the only reason I want to do this is sort of financial. Then there's all the other stuff. So we think that when, it's funny, you said something a phrase that I got put in my head years ago is misery is optional. And the first part of that is pain is inevitable. Misery is optional. When I was writing the book, I also had this thought that just popped into my brain that was like, and I attributed it to a character in the book. And it was that there's only life. And what I mean by that is, I actually find that the work-life balance construct kind of a false construct. It's like when we integrate, because we spend so much time at work. So why not build cultures that make people want to be at work, even though they also want to be hiking or writing or, I'm on a lake. I see this guy going by in the, in the skull. So, but integrate it all. And the people where I have found where the cultures are integrated, where they treat people like the humans they are, holy smokes, they thrive, they do, financially better, and people don't want to leave, as you said so well. So, we have a whole way of thinking about it where we get the principles, and what our job really then is to embed them in what we call the conscious development employee life cycle. So we want people to say, this is who we are. These are our values. These are our leadership principles. Then, okay, great. Well, we know how then to embed them in attracting people, recruiting scripts, performance management systems, the learning and development that supports performance management. And they're all kind of based on these principles that aren't just, they're really not ours. We help, I guess, co-create, which is a bit overused word, but we work with leadership to create. This is the culture. And I say one more thing and I'll take a breath. And that is that, for me, the best definition of culture is how things get done. And, I think sometimes people think culture is, well, we got, Tuesday beer night or and all that's great. But culture is actually how things get done, who gets promoted, why people stay. And it's that how that I think we really work with people to help them figure it out. Because there's a lot of people, I guess it's three more things, not one more thing. A lot of people want to do this, but they don't actually. I mean, they believe it in their heart, but they don't know how to do it. So people like you and me and Catherine, we help people figure that out.
Yeah, it reminds me of a couple stories. One, more recent, I was having a conversation with my brother the other day, and he is in a hybrid work environment. He works for, we'll say, the government. I won't specific. It's not federal, but, they are in his department. We're working remotely pretty much throughout the pandemic, and now they're coming back to the office a little bit, but not all the time. And, their CIO, which is, which oversees his department, said, okay, we want to make something perfectly clear. When we say working remotely, that does not mean we expect you to be anchored to your home. As long as you have secure internet access, which they provide them, an internet stick and VPNs and all that kind of stuff for security purposes. So you're not on public Wi-Fi type of things. We don't care where you're working from. If you're in the office, yes, we go to your desk. But if you're working remotely, that means remotely. You can be wherever. If you want to be in Boston, go to Boston. As long as you are able to do your job. And, that's an element of trust that, had a huge ripple effect. And of course, performance in the department has thrived because you've got people there. You created the culture where people are like, they believe in me. I'm going to go the extra yard or the extra mile and do this and, help out and not mind if I get paged like, yeah, I can fix it. You know, and they, you know, they bring their laptop along, or they can a lot of times do the stuff right from their smartphone. So it just makes it easier. And then the other story was, it's alarming, this almost 25 years ago, but I worked for an internet market startup at the time. Now they're publicly traded, global company, doing well in all of that. And I remember I was one of the earlier employees. And I remember my boss, my first day, came by my cubicle at 3:32 p.m. Yes, I remember the time, because I looked at the clock, and he leaned on the shelf, and he leaned in. He goes, okay, I'm just going to lay some ground rules for working here. And I'm like, okay, here we go. You know, here's what it is. And, you know, this was, you know, still at the kind of the tail end of the dot-com era, when things were absolutely zany. And you remember those days where recruiters would place you and then 6 months later call and say, do you really love the job? Because I got another one that pays $25,000 more a year. And of course, at my age at that time, I was like, let's have a chat. You know, why not? You know, it's like, why would you turn away that kind of money to grow, especially when you're at that age? So, you know, the boss leans in, he says, okay, here's the rules. I don't care when you get here. I don't care when you go home. As long as you get your job done, everything's good. Here's my cell number. Here's my pager number to date how long ago that was. I'm here on Mondays, Thursdays, and Fridays. Tuesdays and Wednesdays, I'm at the East Coast office. Call me or page me anytime. Let me know if there's anything you need. And I hope you have fun working here. I turned down several job offers for the 3+ years that I was working there that paid more. I'm like, no, I'm not leaving. And got bonuses, was recognized, helped build an infrastructure. It was an amazing experience. And I still stuck with me so well that I use that all the time when I was running organizations in healthcare and turned around a healthcare organization that had 90% turnover annually to 6% in a year. How did I do it? I use that phrase. I don't care when you get here. I don't care when you leave. Just get your job done. Everything's good. What do you need? Let me know.
I love that story. And it's funny, as I was thinking about things we might cover today, first thing I put under for leadership beliefs for Ed Ofterdinger is people love story. And what you just did there, I mean, you brought to life by telling that story, actually how to build a culture of trust. And what, you know, it's just such a great story. One of the things we did in the back of the book, and it's Andrew and his team discovered along the way, is that we have this idea that there are certain mind skills and people skills that, you know, if you have these, you can really thrive. And one of the hardest ones in people skills is this idea of kind of giving and receiving feedback. The reason I thought of that is that a story that I always tell is a boss, you know, because I think if we're lucky, like you and I have been, you've had some great bosses. You probably had some bad bosses too, and that should influence you, but I've had some great ones. And I tell this story a lot, and if it take a minute to tell, so I'll just do it quickly. I was at one of the larger accounting firms. I was probably late 20s at the time, and I had to make my first presentation to the board. And I mean, I think if they had PowerPoint, it might have been 2 slides. It wasn't that big a deal, but I was nervous. I mean, CEO, chairman of the board, head of the audit committee, and my boss, because it was a major client of the firm, managing part of the offices there. And so here I am, and I do the thing. So afterwards, I'm walking down the hall. My boss walks right by me, says, see you tomorrow. The big boss, the managing partner, says, hey, you got a minute? I'm like, I felt like Gibbs, you know, and NCIS, he's hitting the button. And he says, how do you think that went? Like, and right at that moment, you know, like, I said, okay. He goes, well, you know, Eddie, they tell me you're smart, but we'd have no way of knowing based on that presentation. I mean, I just like froze. And so I've told this story a lot, and people will usually go, I usually ask, what, worst boss ever? And, you know, hands will go up. Like, no, what he did next is actually makes him the best boss ever. He goes, but we can do something about that. And literally within 2 weeks, they had me at a 4-day training class on public speaking, making presentations and stuff. So I think the best boss, again, in the context of telling stories, is the one who actually calls out and helps you. The worst boss is the one who walked right by me and got on the elevator. He knew I had done a bad job. He wasn't going to take the time to invest in me. But what we notice in our work, and it's why we have it as one of the most important skills, is people, I read something, it might have been Dan Pink, somebody yesterday, that there's a big difference between nice and kind. Yes. And so kindness is one of the skills that we believe, but also because people that are nice don't confront you. People that are kind care about you and actually take the time. So we help people through that because people are still fearful of hurting other people's feelings. So we show them how to do it. And there's, I know you do the same kind of thing. And it makes all the difference in the world. You wouldn't be telling that story about trust if, you know, 25 years later, and I'm still talking about how Bob confronted me in the hall 25 years ago. So hopefully that's a good one.
Oh, definitely. And it shows those moments in time where we pick up little tools. You know, we talked about it a couple of times, you know, our accounting backgrounds. We use a lot of those tools in our daily routines every day, even though we don't necessarily think about it. It's like, okay, I learned this one at 1995 when I was doing the audit for, no, we don't remember that. We right. It's just part of our muscle memory. It's just something that we do. But there's those moments in time where, you know, the great moments that where we felt and you felt it, you know, and obviously, you know, them sending you for training and all that stuff, which obviously was an investment that continues to pay dividends for you and will all of your days. If that person didn't do that, that boss didn't do that, who knows where things, you know, you probably would have been fine. You could have stayed, came, you know, managing, retiring managing partner, been fine, had the great career, done some other things, everything would have been fine. But by doing that, it opened up doors way down the road. And I think a lot of people, especially younger ones, and I'm not, you know, picking on generations. Believe me, we were all dumb when we're young. Some of us still are, you know, so don't worry about that. But I think it's one of those things where something like that happens. You go to that training and then decades later, or, you know, maybe a couple decades later, all of a sudden you're doing all the things that you're doing now. And you're like, would that have happened the way that it did if that didn't happen, if I didn't give that presentation that day? It's one of those things.
I don't think so. I really don't believe it. I needed that. And my encouragement to people, and this is exactly what you're doing, is that those little micro moments of consciously helping someone develop, they make, you can't even, by the way, I was on at that time, and I'll just tell you, it was Arthur Anderson, who's now out of business, so it doesn't matter. But that time I was actually pretty sure I was going to leave. I ended up leaving, obviously, but I stayed like three more years. It was one of those things where I just know the value of what they did. And I've told that story forever since, sometimes with attribution to the exact guy, if it's the right appropriate time, but they did a great thing for me. And so that one of the things in our conscious development lifecycle is offboarding, because brand ambassadors out there talking about what a great culture AO People Partners was, or the Breakfast Leadership Group. I mean, that pays off big time. And I feel like I've carried that message, which is, that's a really important part of it. And,
you know, it's important work, and you know, pay attention to those moments in life, because you never know how many doors that moment's going to open up for you down the road. So, Ed, I've loved this conversation. Where can people find out more about you, the book, and all this amazing work you're doing?
Thank you very much. So our book is called Conscious, Capable, and Ready to Contribute. You can find it at any of the online bookstores, Amazon, you know, Barnes & Noble, et cetera. Or you can just contact us at aopeoplepartners.com. And I learned to do this in the fourth grade. And my name is Ed Ofterdinger, O-F-F like Frank, T as in Tom, E-R-D-I-N-G-E-R. And I'm on LinkedIn, and you can reach out to me. I appreciate it.
And I'll definitely have that in the show notes. So, Ed, great talking with you. Could talk with you hours about this. So really appreciate your time today.
It was great. Thanks a lot. I enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to the Breakfast Leadership Show, part of the Breakfast Leadership Network. Visit breakfastleadership.com for tips on empowering your business and your life.